Good day, everyone, and welcome, and thank you for joining us for today's IBM teleconference, Accelerate and Simplify Adoption and Development of SOA with Rational Business Developer Extension. Today's teleconference will last approximately 60 minutes and will include a live question and answer session. Also, today's conference is being recorded. This teleconference will show how the use of Enterprise Generation Language, EGL, the language within Rational Business Developer Extension, RBDE, can help significantly reduce the cost and deliver innovative SOA solutions to the business faster. The speaker for today's teleconference is Stefano Sergi, IBM Software Group Rational EGL Market Manager. At this time, I'd like to turn the conference over to Mr. Sergi. Please go ahead, sir.
Okay. Hi, everybody, and welcome to this webcast, and thanks for taking the time to tune in and learn about how to accelerate and simplify the deployment of service-oriented architecture solutions using Rational Business Developer Extension. I am Stefano Sergi. I'm the product line manager for the Rational Business Developer Extension and the Enterprise Generation Language Technology for the Rational brand of IBM. If you go to chart number two, this is going to be a very brief call, and what I intend to cover is a little bit about what are the main challenges of implementing services that participate in a service-oriented architecture, and why and what is in a service-oriented architecture. We then are going to shift gear and look at how you would develop services using Rational's Enterprise Generation Language, and how do you consume services using this technology, and or you generate web services. And then we'll wrap it up at the end. Let's move on to chart number three. And so, you know, why is a service orientation and service-oriented architecture becoming so prevalent and so important in the industry today? I am sure that many of your companies have already started, and if they haven't started, have been thinking about starting down the path of service orientation. And, of course, the answer is it's pretty obvious. It is because of the lack of flexibility and responsiveness that today suffer by most companies because of the maze and the rigidity of their application architectures. If you look at this chart, you will see an actual application architecture of one of our customers where the blocks represent applications and the lines represent data that need to flow and information exchanges between the applications. It is no wonder that every time there is a new requirement, a new business need, the companies have such a hard time responding. And that's what the promise of service orientation is intended to address, to fight this complexity, rigidity, the monolithic legacy applications, these hidden interfaces, and these custom-coded myriad of single point-to-point connections that make this such a challenging task. This business flexibility is actually achieved through service orientation, if you go to chart number four, because service orientation is really a business approach rather than a technological approach. The promise of service orientation is the fact that a service represents a repeatable business task rather than a technological entity or a module or a program. It's a repeatable business task, such as check the customer credit or open an account. And service orientation is nothing but a way of integrating all these, you know, businesses, all the business functionalities as a set of these services, as these repeatable business tasks in many different permutations. To support this new business approach, you need an IT architectural style that allows to use information software artifacts in a service-oriented manner. And of course, what this does is changes the notion of what an application is. And essentially, we're seeing the shift of instead of having programs and applications that are self-sustained and monolithic and single-purpose into a set of modular and integrated atomic objects and services. And that is the notion of a composite application. And so what is the traditional application is essentially something that it's going to give away to this new composition of services to achieve more business flexibility. Okay, so with that under our belt, if we go to chart number 5, we're going to see now what it means from an application developer, from a programmer standpoint, to realize this software modularity, to realize these services in a way that they can then participate in this orchestration, in this free connectivity across the network, regardless of the platform where they run, regardless of the location where they are, regardless of how do these modular pieces of software see data, consume data, or express data. And so really some of the challenges, some of the difficulties of implementing these services, one is in the fact itself that to make the services available through these networks freely and openly, you need to then start learning new standards and new architectures. So, for example, you have to deal with XML, and the data has to be expressed and exchanged in XML. So learning and parsing and dealing with the data in that. The other thing is you have to express the services, for example, through the web service definition language to make sure that the service is reachable and other consumers have access, have the right path to access the service. You have to also understand the invocation protocol, the SOAP, for example, one of the protocols that sustains the service orientation. So dealing with that requires people to have to learn new things. You're not going to scratch the things you have, and when you build new pieces of software, new services, you have to make them available, for example, through service facades to programs that deal with data in a different way than in how services exchange it. Therefore, there will be probably the need to learn how to use certain adapters or certain integration protocols. And then the other thing is that when you develop a service-oriented solution, often what happens is that you cross platform boundaries because now you have these logical services that can be and often do run across different systems, different machines, different IT resources. They are just logical services of the business, and therefore all of these things contribute to the complexity of service orientation. So if you go to chart number 6, why is rational investing in simplifying and creating a way to easily consume and easily create services using what we call the enterprise generational language? Because, first of all, it's a slow, very repetitive, very error-prone chore to create and to consume these services. There is a lot of low-level coding that can really slow down programmers. The developers, the programmers, often are not technically skilled enough. They are very proficient in the business domain. But if they are anything like many of the programmers we talk to, they come from traditional backgrounds like COBOL, like RPG for System I, for example, like PL1 for the mainframe. They may be proficient in 4GLs that have emerged over the years to simplify the development of traditional applications. But unfortunately, services, in order to make services available and usable in an SOA, typically you will need to understand maybe Java and certainly some of the web services standards that we talked about. And these type of developers are unable to, or at least have to learn very slowly these type of technologies. And the retraining may be very slow, very high cost, and sometimes, you know, the business pressure to produce the services and the new type of flexible solution does not afford the time of this retraining. So another important issue is that of what we call the attrition of the legacy developers. Legacy developers being those developers who understand the traditional transactional platforms like mainframe, transactional environments, Qix, IMS, or iSeries. These developers, as they retire, who is going to take their place and create new services for an SOA architecture to run on those platforms where their data is? And that's a big issue, and that's the reason why we're investing and creating a strong support of service orientation in this technology, enterprise generational language. If we go to chart number 7, you will see some of the design points of this technology. The enterprise generational language is designed to make service development totally independent from where the service is going to actually run. It's essentially a platform-independent service specification. So you can define at any level of detail the behavior of the service and the data manipulation and the data usage of the service without having to write any platform-specific code. This level of independence is achieved through a different language abstraction. And this language abstraction is very simple, very quick. It's easy to learn for traditionally skilled programmers as well as newly skilled programmers. I would say developers of any background can immediately understand and use this specification. It hides all the technical complexity. And, of course, it's designed from the ground up to support but hide all the SOA standards. Another important point is that even though you are going to use, when you use this approach, a specification that is not platform specific, at the same time, there is a generation step that takes this neutral, target neutral specification and transforms it into an optimal, well-behaved code that runs natively into your platform of choice where the service will actually run. And then finally, another important design point for SOA, for the EGL technology, is the fact that EGL has to interoperate extremely easily and seamlessly with the legacy, whatever already exists. All this incredible amount of investment that today sustains your business. And so it is designed to make that interoperation extremely simple and therefore making it possible to immediately service enable your existing legacy. So these are all the design points. Let's go to chart number 9, and let's talk about developing services and where can you actually deploy services developed in enterprise generational language. After you create a service in EGL, you can immediately test the service without the need of deploying the services into the target platform. You can functionally verify that the service is actually fulfilling the requirement of the business directly in the EGL language. You have sort of an interpretive engine that lets you do the functional verification of your service. And then after that, once you are satisfied that the service is in fact behaving the way the business requires it to do, then you can actually create code that gets deployed into the system where the service ultimately will run and be consumable within the service-oriented architecture system or the composite application. And this is done through the generation of either Java or COBOL code from this EGL specification, and the Java code generated from the EGL generation engine that is contained inside the Rational Business Developer extension product can run on and be deployed to any of the J2EE compliant application servers in any of the systems where they run. So, for example, it can run under WebSeer or under Tomcat on a Windows, on a Linux, on a Unix platform, as well as on System I or on System Z. And you can also generate COBOL, which then will be compiled for deployment either on the System I native i5 OS operating systems as well as on the System Z CICS transaction management, transaction monitor. And in a planned release, we also plan to deploy and execute the services that will be deployed into the IMS transaction manager of the System Z environment. So let's now go to chart number 10 and talk a little bit about the abstraction that I sort of hinted to a couple of charts ago. Part of the power of EGL and the power of Rational Business Developer Extension comes from the fact that this specification provides an abstract way to specify service behavior. An example of that abstraction is the way that you would access data, regardless of where the data is physically stored. You will define and use the notion of data records. Data records are these abstract entities through which and through a set of common verbs, regardless of what the access method for the particular physical data organization is, you will continue specifying the access to the data, for example, reading data or updating the data or replacing or deleting the information through very simple verbs and this notion of record. The binding and the generation of the code that will actually do the data manipulation to the database will be done by the generator engine, which creates the access code underneath. And the developer can create these generic services that are actually truly functionally complete. So abstraction, and that creates a lot of portability of services. For example, a service that you create for a relational database could also be repurposed for access, for example, of data contained in an index file. Other examples of abstraction are those that allow you, through very simple verbs like a call statement, that realize the connectivity and the linkage to existing application code. For example, you can invoke an RPG program sitting on an iSeries or on a System I box with a simple call statement from the EGL specification. You have no need of mapping the data from the EGL data specification to the RPG data specification. You have no need of coding, for example, if the service that invokes the RPG program is going to be deployed on a Java runtime, you have no need to mapping the data from a Java environment to an RPG environment. You simply pass EGL parameters on your call statement and let the generation engine take care of the data mapping and protocol invocation and all of that. So very, very powerful. And, of course, this is true for COBOL sitting on a mainframe, for RPG sitting on an iSeries computer, and or for local C, or even for invoking existing Java. So very powerful notion of abstraction. Chart number 11. Gives us a sense of some of the tools offered by the Rational Business Developer extension to produce quickly services directly from models. The ability to transform UML models into actual running code, running services, makes it possible to develop services very, very quickly. And certainly these are just services for data access that maps to the model. But nonetheless, it is a very powerful notion to be able to model your services using, for example, the UML notation, and then immediately create, define some transformation parameters that create EGL specification and source code that can then be generated to Java or COBOL for deployment to any of the supported platform. Very, very, very powerful notion. How is this all possible? It is through the use, if you go to chart number 12, it is through the use of the actual notion of service that is built directly inside the EGL language specification. Using many other languages, a service is nothing but a wrappering of other language entities like programs. And therefore, there is a lot of mapping that you have to do as a developer into what the program does and how then that manifests itself into service interfaces that is disjointed from the development of the program. With EGL, we change that paradigm, and we basically encourage the developer to define services at the time they actually write the functionality. And the service interface is immediately available as a service, both within the EGL environment. So you can, from EGL, use, consume services written in EGL, as well as render the service that you write in EGL as a web service and then access it not only from EGL but from any service requester environment. So very powerful notion of service built inside the language that allows you to access services locally or remotely, for example, by the way of an HTTP connection as a web service. The other important thing is that we built in the EGL language notation a way to define to the EGL environment external services so that, for example, if you have a credit check service that was developed by a third party or by a business partner, you can define that interface in EGL and then access that service simply by invoking the interface within the EGL coding environment. So that's a very powerful notion. So on page 13, we see sort of a summary of the things we've been discussing, the EGL and the Rational Business Developer Extension environment allow you at development time to really focus on the business logic and implementing the SOA design elements, services, and interfaces with no regard to where these services will actually be deployed or for using services with no regard of their location or how they were created, or even ignoring the WSDL interface of that service. Services that you consume in EGL actually manifest themselves as EGL interfaces. And so you can actually do all this, and not only coding it, but also testing and verifying the functionality of your SOA solution and of your services for an SOA solution, a composite application, all in this simple environment. Then if you develop services, you can actually deploy them to all the platforms supported, WAS or Tomcat or other J2E environment, or to Kix or iSeries, as well as IMS in the future. And you can deploy it as a web service or as a private service. So you can access it through SOAP or through, you know, other access protocols like ECI or TCP/IP. We also have plans to support other SOA runtimes as they become more widely accepted in the industry. For example, the service component architecture and the, you know, BPEL service orchestrations based on SCA are being pursued by IBM as an industry standard, and we have plans to support generation and deployment to that environment from the same EGL neutral specification. Very powerful. I mentioned also the ability to leverage external web services through the EGL interfaces that are automatically created by the Rational Business Developer extension. Let's move on to chart number 14, where we see another sort of rendering. You can focus on these EGL service notions and then deploy these services within an SOA stack. And they are well-behaved web services and can be used even today. Even though we do not generate SCA components, we do generate web services, and web services can be consumed within a BPEL solution and within an SOA stack. So EGL can be, and in fact, integrates very nicely in the Eclipse-based environment where you may be using things like WebSphere Integration Developer, also an Eclipse-based SOA orchestration type of environment. You don't, however, need to be concerned with how the data manifests itself in that stack. You just, as a developer, deal with the data, create data, and consume data as if it is EGL data components, data elements. Let's go one level, one notch down now to chart number 16, and let's take a look for those of you who are a little more technical at what really happens under the covers to make this possible. For example, if you have web services that were developed by a third party or by yourself using Java, using .NET, using, for example, other tools like the Qlik Service Flow Modeler that IBM makes available to combine existing 3270 type of data flows into a single WSDL interface, you can actually import the representation of those services, those WSDL files, inside the Rational Business Developer extension, and that import step create automatically EGL interfaces and EGL records that represent the same data that was defined in those web services WSDL definitions. No need to do the mapping from XML to EGL. It's all done automatically, both statically for the definition of these interfaces and records and data items, as well as dynamically when the data is actually passed back or exchanged with the service that you are consuming at runtime. So the EGL application and the EGL programs and services that consume that service will use the runtime proxy that will know where consulting the WSDL file reach and how to reach, and it will also do the mapping of the data from EGL to XML in order to guarantee that exchange. This is all transparent to the developer. And on page 17, you see a couple of examples of how the service consumption is actually made simple. The EGL artifacts are created through very simple wizards from the WSDL files. And these files are parsed, and all the necessary interfaces and data structures and data elements are created within the EGL environment. If you now shift to chart number 19, we're now going to look at the reverse, where you create a service using the EGL technology and the EGL notation, and you create EGL records and EGL data elements, and then you generate both the code, for example, Java code or COBOL code that represents or that executes the implementation of the service behavior, as well as we generate from Rational Business Developer extension, we generate the WSDL that make this service implementation reachable by a service consumer on the right, which can be, for example, an orchestrated business process in the process server, or it can be an ESB, or it can be another direct invocation of the service from a service requester. And what really happens there is the WSDL that we generate will direct those requester to the runtime proxy that does all the mapping of the data and then directs the invocation to the Java or COBOL service implementation that was generated from the EGL original service definition. What is important to stress here is that the developer has to be not concerned at all to what's on the right of the blue area of this picture. All the developer has to know and be able to do is to define these EGL services and this EGL data information. And then the generation technology takes care of all the rest. Very powerful notion. Chart number 20 just shows a typical example of an EGL service, and you can code it using the user-friendly, very productive Rational Business Developer extension Eclipse-based environment and the very terse and concise language notation that is platform neutral that you see here, for example, add employee service. It's a logical service implementation. It is not necessary to understand all the plumbing of the service-oriented architecture in order to do it. And another important thing to know is that within that service function that you may define in EGL, you could simply issue a call statement to allow reaching a remote program or a local program that has been in existence forever, for whatever many years, and yet this program is going to manifest itself as a service through the service definition of EGL. So very, very powerful notion. So in summary, why is it important and how does EGL and Rational Business Developer Extension help develop service-oriented solution? One is because it lowers the adoption barriers to SOA because EGL is so easy to learn, it's so natural in a way to the notion of programming to any programmer. And it also deploys these services to any of the platforms that you may have so that the creation and the consumption of service can be done almost immediately. And of course, because EGL is a more productive development environment than lower level languages, you can accelerate the development SOA solution. And not only for the productivity, but also because a lot less training being required, a lot less time has to be devoted to prepare yourself or to prepare the developers to tackle SOA architectures. So I hope that piqued your interest in this powerful technology and how it can help us going down the path of service orientation. There is plenty of information about EGL and Rational Business Developer Extension on both our external website, and also there is a Developer Works Rational Business Developer Extension Zone that contains a lot of literature examples and even allows you to sign up for a free web-based training on EGL so that you can hands-on experience how easy it is to develop services and to develop service-oriented solution using this technology. So with that, I would like to pass it back to the operator to open up for questions.
Thank you, Stefano. Now we'd like to ask you to participate in a brief electronic survey. Right after the survey, we will have a live Q&A session with the presenter. Your feedback is important to us, and we do appreciate the time that you take to answer these questions. To participate, simply press the star key followed by the number that best corresponds to your choice. Please listen to all options before making your selection. There will be a brief pause between each question to allow everyone a chance to respond. Question 1, please evaluate your level of satisfaction with today's teleconference. If it was high, press star 1. If it was medium, press star 2. And if it was low, press star 3. Please stand by while we allow everyone a chance to signal. Question 2. Was the level of technical information presented in this teleconference? If it was at the right level, press star 1. If it was not technical enough, press star 2. If it was more technical than I needed to hear, press star 3. Once again, we'll pause just a moment to allow everyone a chance to respond. Question 3. Is your organization moving to SOA web-based services? If yes, press star 1. If no, press star 2. Question 4. Do you believe RBDE using the EGL language would be a helpful approach for your organization? If yes, press star 1. If no, press star 2. We'll pause just a moment. On to question 5. Do you need to deploy your SOA solutions using, if mainframe, press star 1, if system I, press star 2, or if other distributed servers, press star 3? On to our final survey question. We hope you have enjoyed the teleconference today. Please let us know if you are interested in receiving additional information or follow-up regarding the products discussed today. If yes, press star 1. If no, press star 2. That concludes our survey. Thank you all for your participation. Now let's move to your questions. To ask your question, please press the star key followed by the digit 1 on your telephone at any time. At this time, I will turn the call over to Stefano while we wait for questions.
For the questions, if there are any.
First question will come from Betsy Brzezik of eBurnet. Your line is open, Betsy. Please go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. On the data access method, is vSAM one of the methods that's supported?
vSAM actually is supported for Z environment, and you can actually create services that access vSAM files and then make them, you know, render them as either web services or EGL private services.
Okay, and actually I have two more questions. Can I ask?
Sure.
Okay. On the model transformation, do you have to use UML?
The model transformation facility currently is supported for UML class diagrams only, and you can also use the similar facility to get to generate EGL services from relational database catalogs, so directly from the database schema.
Okay. And on slide 19, the first box where you have Java WASM and then COBOL CICS, there's an asterisk after that. What does that indicate?
Sorry, can you repeat which slide you're looking at?
Slide 19. the first box after Cobalt CICS, there's an asterisk. Maybe it's not supposed to be there.
My slide 19 is doesn't show what you're mentioning. Is this the slide that says generating web services consumable in an SOA?
Yes.
And I don't see an asterisk.
Okay.
Oh, yes, of course, there is an asterisk. I see it. Okay. I guess there was an intent. Kix is one of the possibilities. The other one is i5OS, and there was an asterisk for IMS, which will be available later this year.
Okay.
So Kix is actually available now.
Oh.
But the asterisk is probably indicating you have to have the right level of Kix, which is 3.1.
Okay, that was my other question. Okay, 3.1.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Well, thank you very much. It was a great presentation. Appreciate it.
Oh, you're very welcome.
And ladies and gentlemen, again, that is star 1 to ask a question, and we'll pause for just a moment. Our next question will come from Girish Kapagar of Charles Schwab.
Sergey, I want to ask you whether EGL is some kind of follow-on product to CSP. It looks very familiar.
Whether EGL is related to CSP?
Yes.
Oh, okay. EGL is actually kind of an evolution of a number of different technologies that IBM developed over the last 20 years. So we have used some of the notions and concepts that made sense as we re-architected this rapid development solution for more modern type of computing. We took what was good about, for example, Visual Age Generator, which kind of traced the roots of that technology out of the CSP environment. We also took some, technologies and ideas from other products like Informix 4GL and from, through some of the acquisition that IBM did in the last few years. And then we kind of re-architected the environment to fit new computing requirements. So there is actually for CSP users there is somewhat of a migration path to EGL, and it's not a push button thing, but you could actually take some very old CSP code and transform it to EGL and start reusing it in new ways for web development and for service oriented solutions. Does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
Okay.
And ladies and gentlemen, as a final reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1. And Mr. Sergey, it appears there are no further questions at this time. I will turn the conference back over to you for any additional or closing comments.
Okay, well, I hope that this was sufficiently clear and interesting to all the participants. I encourage you to take a look at this technology, and I hope that some of you may even be interested enough to go attend one of our web workshops. With that, thank you for attending and taking the time.
That does conclude today's teleconference. Again, thank you for your participation and have a wonderful day.